And I do hope I have with me on the phone Rabbi Galperin.
Good morning, Ilan.
Good morning, Rabbi. How are you?
Thank God, Baruch Hashem. And how are you?
I am doing good.
Good.
Yeah. So, Parshat HaShavua.
This week's Torah portion is Ekev, which is a very interesting Torah portion, because we see that Moses continues his closing address to the children of Israel. He's about to die soon, promising that if they will fulfill the commandments, the mitzvot of the Torah, they will prosper in the land they are about to conquer and settle, and in keeping with God's promise to their forefathers, they're going to receive it. Moses also rebukes them for their failings in the first generations of people, you know, recalling the worship of the golden calf, the rebellion of Korah, the sin of the spies, their angering God at Tiberia Masa, the graves of lust. So he went on to enumerate all those things, but he also speaks of God's forgiveness of their sins and the second tablets which God inscribed to them. You know, they're 40 years in the desert, that they're going to have what they need, the manna and the bread, and how they're going to get into the land that is flowing with milk and honey, you know, blessed with the seven kinds of items that Israel is blessed with.
The fruits, yeah.
Right, wheat, barley, grapes, figs, pomegranates, olives, and dates, and so on and so forth. And one of the key passages in the Parsha as well is the second chapter of the Shema that we say. We know there's three chapters. This now we're talking about the second one, which repeats the fundamental mitzvah commandments enumerated in the first chapter and describes the rewards and so on and so forth. So now, as we see that Moses is continuing admonishing the Jewish people that he started doing 2 weeks ago in the first portion of Devarim, so this week he recalls their terrible failing of making the golden calf and how God wanted to destroy them. God forbid, obviously. And he interceded. Moses interceded with prayer on their behalf. He then reminisces that God said to him, chisel out for yourself two stone tablets like the first one. So obviously he was talking about the second set of tablets that he was going to give the Jews after he forgave them.
Yeah.
The Gemara, the Talmud, raises a very interesting question. How did Moses become rich? He was a very wealthy man, but how did he become rich? And it seems that Moses was reported to be a man of considerable wealth. So the sages probed the source of his wealth. Where did it come from? Their finding to this query was Mipsolton Shaluchot, which means from the chips of the tablets. Since it says, chisel out for yourself, as we said, chisel out for yourself two stone tablets, the sages deduce that Moses was permitted to keep the fragments that fell from these extremely valuable stones when the lettering was being chiseled out on them. Now, obviously, this observation is baffling, really, to say the least, because we know that there's a popular law among decent people that it is not right to count other people's money. I know you are, Ilan, very wealthy, but I don't know how much money you have in the bank. How can I count? How can I tell people this one's rich, this one's poor, this one's this? We don't know, right? So according to some commentaries, this is among the advice that our sages give in Pirkei Avos. When they say, let the money of your fellow man be as dear to you as your own. What does that mean? We're being taught that just as a person's money is dear to him and he does not appreciate other people discussing it, similarly, a person should treat his friend's money the same way.
Yeah.
He should not count his friend's money. So undoubtedly, Moses was a person of great integrity. So why suddenly would the sages deem it proper and necessary to scrutinize the source of his financial wealth? Why all of a sudden? It therefore seems, I think, that no one really questions Moses' wealth. Everyone was immensely impressed with his honesty and integrity, because there was not a silver or anything, you know, there wasn't a doubt about a single penny of his. If God felt it necessary to make Moshe rich, no one had any reservation or envy. However, in addition to his vast material wealth, Moses was also the wealthiest person in the community. In other words, in spiritual wealth. And this is what our sages were interested in. They knew very well that material wealth is a gift from heaven that he was entitled to have. Very nice. No one's going to be jealous. But spiritual affluence is the achievement of man. No one gives that to us. We have to achieve it. But how did Moses do it? They're eager to know the source of his spiritual success. And perhaps they figured that, you know, if they knew how he acquired it, it would be something that they too would be able to do. So what they concluded was that part of his vast spiritual wealth was the chips of the luchos.
Mm-hmm.
And you ask, well, yeah, that's physical. But how do we explain that? Because we realize the Ten Commandments and all the 613 mitzvahs, the commandments, are included in them, are of equal importance in the chips of the luchos.
That's the tariag mitzvot, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. They're all equal. Big, small, doesn't make a difference. However, there are some people who play favorites and show preference to some of the mitzvahs. And some go a step further and observe only some mitzvahs entirely and neglect others.
Because it's easier.
Yeah. Or we think, oh, we'll get a bigger reward for this one versus the small one or whatever.
These are bigger ones, yeah.
Right. These people compare some of the mitzvahs to precious stones and regard others as mere just chips, which are much less valuable. The chips of the tablets are symbolic of often neglected mitzvahs. So our sages came to the conclusion that Moses reached his spiritual wealth only one reason, because of his careful observance of every mitzvah, even those that some people consider to be merely, quote-unquote, chips. So now, in order for me to grow spiritually, I have to do mitzvahs that are big or small, and who am I to judge? And that was how Moses became so rich. So you can imagine if Moses, the highest person, the holiest person, observed every mitzvah, regardless if it's the most smallest mitzvah, the greatest mitzvah, how much more so we have the ability and the koach, the power to be able to do the smallest mitzvah to the greatest mitzvah. As it says, we are standing on a giant's shoulders. We have the power of all our ancestors that were behind us, giving us that energy to be able to grow. And with that, having that in mind, we will become rich spiritually. And through that, regardless of whatever type of mitzvah it's going to be, we are going to do it. And we're not going to worry about the reward. And we're going to help other people in the world do that as well. And that's something that I think that is so important that we can learn from this week's Torah portion.
Yeah. Rabbi, what about services this week?
Services, Friday evening we have 7 o'clock. Shabbat morning is 9:30. Sunday morning is 8:15, followed by breakfast. This is held at the Shar Shemaim in the chapel. And then as well, we have Monday morning and Thursday morning, 7:15 at the Peretz House. It's a great way to start the day. You're in the office by 8 o'clock.
Sounds good.
Yes.
So, Rabbi, I want to wish you a great weekend and Shabbat Shalom.
You too, and...
And safe trip on Sunday.
Thank you. I'm going to visit my kids in sleepaway camp, so...
Yeah.
Should be fun.
That's great.
And have a great week, and I look forward to talk next week.
Same here.
Be well.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.